Vayavo, Amalek, Vayilochem im Yisrael, Birfidi im. And Amalek came and did battle with Israel in Rephidim. Dot, dot, dot. Vayehi bimei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, Hamolech mehodu viad kush, sheva viesrimu mea medina. And it was in the time of Achashverosh, the Achashverosh who ruled over 127 provinces. Dot, dot, dot. Vaydaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, ki sisa es rosh b'nei Yisrael, lifkudehem v'nasenu, ishko fernafsho ladonai bifkodosam, v'lo yihyevahem negef bifkodosam. And Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, when you count the heads of the children of Israel according to their numbers, each person shall give what's called a kofer nefesh, an atonement for his soul, to Hashem, to God, when they are counted, v'lo yevohem negef, and there won't be any kind of plague or affliction when they are counted. Ze yitenu kol hover al hapakudim machatzis hashekel b'shekel hakodesh, Esrim geira hashekel machatzis hashekel teruma ladonai. And this is what they should give, all that are counted, a half of a silver shekel, which is 20 geira to the shekel, machatzit hashekel, the half shekel they give as a gift to God. We'll talk about this in a moment. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. This show is for Purim and Parshat Ki Tisa. Recording has begun on Wednesday evening, Leil Purim, outside of Jerusalem, and first availability will either be tonight sometime, or maybe tomorrow. Phil will fill in, pun intended, the details. And now, here's Phil.
Thank you, whatever your name is. I forgot to switch it to Zari, who I prefer, but there's a guy's voice, and he's did it, and then I slowed it down 70%, just for fun, because the show is partially for Purim. It's very difficult to focus on Shabbat when Purim is right on top of you. Just give you a little background to the week. We decided, because of Tanit Esther and Purim outside Jerusalem and Purim inside Jerusalem, to accelerate the production of Torah Tidbits. So we produced in the course of Sunday and Monday what we usually do Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. It seemed to work out, even though we were extra tired. That turned Tuesday into Wednesday, the day that the delivery comes of nearly 11,000 copies of Torah Tidbits, and a whole team of volunteers package them, and we start distributing them, and another team of transporters and distributors are taking them all over the country. And then sometime on Tuesday, which is usually Wednesday, we also do the internet site, preparing the files that go up on the internet. And that was Tuesday, which behaved like Wednesday to the point, right? I keep saying today is Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. Especially in the morning when I said Shir Shalayom. I had to make sure I said the right psalm of the day. That brought us into Wednesday, which wasn't Wednesday or Thursday. It really was Tanit Esther. And that was today. We had regular scheduled classes. We had a special class before Mincha. We had the regular Mincha and a late slow Mincha at 5 o'clock, followed by a mini Shir and then Myriv and then refreshments. And now there are Shirim still going on at the center at this time. So it's been a busy time. To me, the amazing thing is, and 36 years in the country, this is the 37th, maybe, Purim, I still can't get used to the idea that the rest of the world has Purim on the 14th of Adar, and we in Yerushalayim sort of sit back after Tanit Esther, with the exception of when it's before early Megillah reading because of Triple Purim, but that's another issue, not so common. And while the rest of the world is doing their Purim, we're relaxing and getting ready for our Purim. When everybody's finished, that's when we start. Anyway, I had originally thought that this afternoon, during the Fast of Esther, I would be doing the show. I'm glad I didn't get to it, because this gives me the Purim spirit without the sober, purposely chosen word of the day of Tanit Esther. What I did say before we davened Mincha on Tanit Esther is that unlike the fast days for the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, which are mournful days and sad days, Tanit Esther is not sad, and it's certainly not mournful. It is serious. And I believe that our sages were very clever to extract the seriousness that really belongs to Purim and to not let it hold back the festivities of the day and give us a day right before Tanit Esther for the introspection and the pondering which is necessary. What I said was that all was fine and good that Haman was hanged, and his 10 sons were hanged, and his plot was turned upside down. And yet, there is a question which we purposely don't let bother us on Purim, but today, earlier today, Tanit Esther was the perfect opportunity for that. And that is to figure out what we did to deserve to be threatened. Just in an analogous situation, when a bad guy is holding a gun pointed at the face of his intended victim, and he pulls the trigger, and the gun does not go off, the fright and the panic of the intended victim is real. Relief comes very quickly that he didn't get shot in the face, but there was still, you know, when he says, thank God I am alive, there's a but, and the but is, but I went through something terrible. The Jews in the kingdom of Ahasuerus went through almost a full year being under the threat of total annihilation at the hands of Haman's henchmen, who were only thrilled to be able to attempt to do what their master Haman had obviously failed to do himself by being taken out of the picture so early. That pondering belongs not on Purim, and we don't have it there. What we have today is a day of pondering the idea, and it's not the only issue, but it was one of the issues, that the Jews in the kingdom of Ahasuerus, only 70 years after the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash and the exile, were so comfortable in their Jewish communities in Babylonia that they felt nothing wrong with attending the extravagant parties that Ahasuerus threw in honor of his kingship, and at these parties displayed the plunder of the Beit HaMikdash that he had stolen from his father-in-law, grandfather-in-law, and paraded around in the garments of the Kohen Gadol, and basically repeated the announcement that he, Ahasuerus, was greater than the God of Israel, because the God of Israel could not save his temple. And he, Ahasuerus, had all of the valuable vessels from the destroyed temple. What Jew should have been at such a party? No one. Even though it was risky, they should have said, no, it's not for us. But they ate and they drank, and they felt comfortable in their dispersion and exile. And when that happens, God will often bring a wake-up call. And that was the threat of annihilation at the hands of Haman. We, through the generations to this very day, effect a tikkun. A tikkun means a repair, a spiritual repair, if you will, for the sin, we'll call it, of eating and drinking at Ahasuerus' party like there was nothing wrong. So we have a day where we abstain from eating and drinking as one part of the tikkun, and a day where we eat well and even drink to excess for the sake of the mitzvah of Purim, and that is the second part of the tikkun. I am sure that in the past years I have used the mashal that I came up with, but I'll share it with you again. Picture an 8-year-old boy. You can substitute anyone else you want, but that's what I picture in my mind, who received a deluxe box of Crayola crayons, 128 different colors, with built-in crayon sharpeners, and he's in seventh heaven because he loves to draw, and he draws well. And one day, he was having himself a picnic of drawing with his new crayons, and it was magnificent. The only problem is, when his parents came home from shopping, they discovered that he drew these beautiful pictures, not on paper, but all over the kitchen walls. And they were very upset, and they got him a bucket of soapy water and a sponge to clean it off the walls. And that was first step, but the second step was punishment. And the father said, give me those crayons. You abuse them, and you will not get them for the next month. I am confiscating them, and you will do without them. The next day, the parents, the mother, let's say, sits the boy down at the kitchen table, hands him a stack of paper and his box of crayons, and says, for the next hour, you will draw pictures one after the other on these pieces of paper. And when you're finished, we will go to the local hospital, to the children's ward, and brighten up their rooms with your beautiful pictures. Here's an example of a sin with crayons and two punishments to repair the sin. One is to abstain from using those crayons. And that was his punishment for a month. The second part of the atonement, the second part of the repair, the tikkun, is to channel the use of the crayons from being an abuse to being a special mitzvah, brightening up the day of sick children. And you need both for a total picture and perspective. I believe that's what happened with Tani D'Esther and Sudat Purim and drinking on Purim. And interestingly, this week's Sedra, which is only a day after our Purim in Jerusalem and 2 days after the rest of the world's Purim, is Parshat Ki Tisa, which contains with it the devastating story of the sin of the golden calf. And without getting into that too much, there are two kinds of tikkun, which come in two forms, so it's really four types of tikkun. And you'll see that the analogy to the crayons fits. The Kohen Gadol, when he went into the Holy of Holies in the Beit HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, removed his garments that contained gold and went in with four garments of pure white linen. Gold was a damning piece of evidence against the Jewish people because of the golden calf. And the Kohen Gadol at that very sensitive moment needs to remove his gold and not go in wearing gold garments. On the other hand, what does he bring into the Holy of Holies with him? He brings a fire pan made of gold with glowing coals from the golden Mizbeach inside the Beit HaMikdash, puts incense on the coals, and the Beit HaMikdash fills with smoke. He goes into the Holy of Holies four different times on Yom Kippur, and what does he see when he gets there? He sees an aron that is completely gold-plated with a solid gold lid called the kaporet, from which are fashioned two cherubs, keruvim, made of gold. Gold-plated carrying rods, solid gold rings through which the carrying rods are inserted. And according to our sources, the walls of the Kodesh HaKodashim were lined with gold. Well, which is it? Excessive use of gold or abstention from gold? The answer is yes, that's correct. When God says it's not appropriate to use gold, you take off those garments and you put on your white linens. When God says you need to repair the sin of the golden calf, that's where the parts of the Mishkan on the Beit HaMikdash used gold to an excess. And that doesn't contradict. Neither does it contradict using the crayons to draw good pictures to be distributed and abstaining from using of the crayons. And the same thing happens from the other part of the sin of the golden calf. The golden calf is in the cow family. We, on Rosh Hashanah, blow shofar, and according to the Mishnah, all horns of kosher animals are kosher for shofar, except those of the cow family. And the Talmud explains, Ein kategor nasa sanegor. A damning piece of evidence, the horn of a cow, is not to be used on behalf of the people of Israel who are asking for atonement on Judgment Day. Not appropriate. And yet, the first sacrifice in the Mishkan was a par, a bull. The main sacrifice of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur was a bull, which are atonement for and tikkun for cheta egel. The egel is the son of the bull. And that which is used to remove ritual impurity from contact with a dead body is a potion made from the ashes of the para aduma, the red heifer, which is considered to be an atonement for her son, the egel. Rashi, quoting Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan, says it's like the king who had a servant woman whose son dirtied the palace, and the king says to the servant, you have to clean up the mess that your son made. So you have both sides of the coin with Tanit Esther and Purim and eating and drinking. You have both sides of the coin with the atonement for Cheto Egel, the use of gold and the absence of gold, the use of the cows and the absence of the cows. And none of that is contradictory. It only becomes wrong when we decide to do our own thing. We say we sinned with gold, let's not use it at all. Well, if God says to make a menorah out of gold and to plate the aron with gold and the shulchan with gold and the mizbeach with gold, then you have to do that. You can't say, I have a better idea. It doesn't work like that. Neither can you say, I will specifically use the horn of a cow to blow on Rosh Hashanah to show that I am fulfilling the mitzvah of that which I sinned with a long time ago. Sorry, doesn't work like that. If God says the shofar cannot be from a cow, then you can't use it. Think about it.
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late. I'll listen to the recording up until now to catch up. In the meantime, let me say happy Purim to everyone. And here is another Purim song for your listening pleasure.
some checking. The male voice at the beginning of the show is called David. Okay. The female voice that you just heard is Zira. Not Zari, but Zira. Not to be confused with Sari or Siri, which is a web browser. No, it's not. It's an artificial voice for giving commands on the phones. I don't know exactly. Anyway, here we've got David, who I slowed down to 70%, and Zira, who I allowed to go regular, and they're part of my team as far as I'm concerned, unless someone has anything different to say. So now let's get back on track. Where were we? I should not have spoken so much about Tani Nestor, since it's behind all of us. And right now, as I am recording this, I'll tell you, it is 10 after 9 in the evening. The evening where most people around the country have already heard Megillah, and many of the festivities that follow Megillah reading in shuls are still taking place. Refreshments and children's programs and whatever. Or not. Or people just go home after Megillah reading and continue making their Mishloach Manot packages for distribution tomorrow morning. Preparing for their Seuda, cooking food, whatever. And we in Jerusalem have the luxury of the extra day. Of course, this year it comes with a price, and that is that our Purim is Friday. And Purim on Friday has a few sticky problems, mostly when Purim activities conflict with Shabbat preparation, with Shabbat appetite for dinner. And for those of you not in Yerushalayim, who probably have not studied up on the issue, let me just present it. The standard opinion is that when Purim is Friday, let me explain that it happens 28% of the time in Jerusalem, and it happens 11.5% of the time, different years, outside of Yerushalayim. So that's on the rare side, and it goes along with what we call in Yerushalayim Purim Mishulash, a three-day spread out of the Minhagim of Purim and the Mitzvot of Purim. It corresponds with Erev Pesach being a Shabbat, which is a fun situation by itself, and with the Seder on Motzoi Shabbat on Saturday night. Now those people outside of Israel who have 2 days of Yom Tov and two Sedarim will be more familiar, because when Pesach is Shabbat, like it is this year, then here in Israel, our only Seder is Friday night. In Chutz Laaretz, it's Friday night and Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night. And that's a situation which we don't have often in Yerushalayim. So everything sort of trades off. Be that as it may, this Friday, we follow one of three options. Option number one is the most common option. I have no idea what percentage of the people do it. And that is to have Seudat Purim, their Purim meal, early in the morning. Not early in the morning, but in the morning before noon. This way, it doesn't encroach on Shabbat, and it gets done in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Purim. There are those who say, not nice to have Seudat Purim at 11 o'clock in the morning. So what they do, the second group, is wait for Mincha time, which is around 12:20. They have a minyan for Mincha, and then they have their Seudah, 12:30, 12:45, whatever. They don't prolong it, but they still don't spoil it with rushing. And they're able to finish their Seuda with enough time to take care of other things that need to be done, both for Purim and for the upcoming Shabbat. And then there is a small number of people who say, What difference does it make if it's Shabbos coming or not? Purim is Purim. Seudat Purim usually starts late in the afternoon and goes into the night. Most people don't do that when it's Friday. And those who do have a lot of interesting, or shall we say, weird things that they do. Let's say, this Shabbat in Yerushalayim, candle lighting is at 5:02. 4 o'clock, this family with its friends and relatives began their Purim Seuda. They washed for Hamotzi. They served wine, upon which they made a Bori Pri Hagafen. And now it's approaching 5:02. They're about an hour into their Seuda, going strong. The women light candles. The tablecloth can be changed into a more Shabbos kind of tablecloth. Kiddush is said over a cup of wine, but according to some opinions, without the bracha borei pri hagafen, just vayechulu hashamayim, and then the mekadesh haShabbat bracha. Others say you could say a borei pri hagafen in Kiddush because it's part of the formula of Kiddush. Let's not go into that. Chalk it up to a dispute in halachic authorities. Then they have 2 loaves of bread covered, as always, on a Friday night. But everybody had already washed for Hamotzi, so they don't wash again. And they don't say Hamotzi again, but the leader of the table breaks the bread and distributes it to everybody who eats part of the challah in honor of Shabbat. Then they serve an extra special dish in honor of Shabbat. It could be an extra side dish above and beyond what was on the table already. It could be another main, could be a special dessert, but it's in honor of Shabbat. When they finally finish their Seuda, comes Birchat Hamazon, which has in it Ritzeh for Shabbat, and they do not say Al Hanisim for Purim. Even though this was a Purim Seuda, it became a Shabbat Seuda, and it gets Ritzeh. Shabbat has a higher priority than Purim. It's now Shabbat. The Purim Seuda is over. And then they gather to daven Ma'ariv. I think that's very weird. I think there's a problem doing it in Yerushalayim anyway, because the idea of extending one Seudat Purim into the night works well when you're observing the 14th of Adar as Purim, and it goes into the 15th of Adar, which is one of the days of Purim, makes sense. But when you're observing your Seuda on Tetvav, the 15th of Adar, then going into the night, whether it's Friday night or any other night, I don't see the point, because you're going into the day following Purim, not into another Purim. Whatever. I'm just telling you how it goes. That's the story, and we will have another Purim song. Last two songs were both from Avrami Flam, an album on Purim songs. We played one last week, maybe two, and two tonight, and I'll try to give one more at least that's not from his album. The problem is that when I save albums to my computer, sometimes they don't come with names. They come just as untitled, and then after a time I forget where they're from, which is not nice because I would like to give credit to whose songs they are, especially on Purim. Why do I say that? Because of something we learn from the Megillah. When Mordechai overhears the threat to Ahasuerus from Bigtan and Teresh, and he sends a message to Esther, who says it to the king in the name of Mordechai, that resulted in the whole positive side of the Purim story, when in chapter 6, later on, the king has a restless night, and he calls for his books of records to be brought to him and read before him, and he finds in there that this Mordechai the Jew saved his life, and he asks his servants, what great reward did this Mordechai get? And they said, nothing. So he's determined to reward Mordechai, and then the whole business with Haman thinking that it's for him and suggesting this elaborate reward, and the king says, okay, do it to Mordechai, the Jew who is in the courtyard of the king. And Haman is kind of depressed from that whole experience, to the point where he goes home and he tells his wife and his advisors that nothing that I have means anything to me, v'chol zeh einenu shove li, as long as I see Mordechai sitting in the king's courtyard, not getting up and bowing to me. And that is a crucial part of the rest of the story. All started because when Esther told her husband Ahasuerus about the plot against him, she said, I have this on reliable source from Mordechai the Jew who sits in your courtyard. So we learn from there, Kol HaOmer Davar B'Shem Omro, Mevi Geula LaOlam. It's a teaching in Pirkei Avot, and it's something that we should take seriously. Because you never know when you give someone credit for saying something good, how it will have a snowball effect and turn out good for everybody. Let me turn a little bit towards the Shabbat that follows. Shabbat Parshat Ki Tisa this year is a break in the sequence of the special Parshiot. Last Shabbat was Parshat Zachor. Next Shabbat will be Parshat Parah. And this is known as a Hafsaka. It happens to be the second Hafsaka this year in the sequence. We had one from Shkalim, a break. Zohar, Pora, a break. Sorry. Zohar, a break. Pora and Hachodesh. There's never a break between Pora and Hachodesh, because by definition, Pora is read on the Shabbat before Parshat Hachodesh. But anyway, Ki Tisa is a break. I mentioned earlier that it has the episode of the golden calf. Without going into detail about the sin of the golden calf and that entire episode, what I want to point out is well known, and that is for 2 1/3 sedras, all of Truma, all of Tetzaveh, and the first third of Ki Tisa, we've read and heard God's giving the mitzvah to the people of Israel by teaching it to Moshe first, of the building of a mikdash, the Mishkan, and everything in it, all of its furnishings, all in great detail about the garments of the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol, and the oil for anointing and the incense and all that kind of stuff. Then we read a reminder of the sanctity of Shabbat, lest one think that building the mikdash is such an important endeavor that it could even be done on Shabbat. Comes the Torah to remind us that it is Shabbat that is the eternal sign between God and the people of Israel. And then God tells Moshe that I'm going to send you down with the tablets of stone and with the Torah. Then comes the episode of the golden calf. And God says to Moshe, go down and see what your people have done. He goes down. He either drops the luchot and they break, or he smashes them and they break. He destroys the egel. He castigates the people. And he goes back up to Har Sinai to ask God's forgiveness. Then there's a portion where not only does God forgive Moshe, I mean the people, but he gives us, transmits to us through Moshe, the famous 13 divine attributes, which become that which we say, and more importantly, which we do to emulate God, that will help bring forgiveness in certain situations of communal sin. And then, next week, the double portion of Vayakel Pekudei is the actual transmission by Moshe of the command to build the mikdash and everything in it to the people. And they do it. Now, the standard, or let's say one standard way of understanding what happened here is that the command to build the mikdash was untainted at the beginning by the sin of the golden calf. Unfortunately, we never heard about it yet, and the people only introduced to the command in the wake of the sin of the golden calf, where their reaction was very reactive. And it will always be sort of a nagging feeling that the Beit HaMikdash was given to us as an atonement for the sin of the golden calf, except for the fact that Parshat Truma and Tetzaveh and the first third of Kitisa all happened, all read, before the sin of the golden calf, to tell us that's what could have been. That's what should have been, because when I, says God, transmitted that mitzvah to Moshe, you had not yet sinned with a golden calf. Our timing could not have been worse. So that is a message that comes across very sharply in Parshat Ki Tisa. With that, I will leave you with one more Purim song, before which I will wish you a Freilichen Purim, a Purim Sameach, a happy Purim, whichever day you observe, and Shabbat Shalom. And let's not forget, L'Hishtameach.
Bye, you did. Because